unless you are a born rebel, you are quickly climatized.
This suggests a kind of orthodoxy. I'll ask some questions, why?
Well, I am now picking up against this business of getting the ministry approval for everything. You see, because under the Act, the State Corporations Act, the minister can give directions to a corporation in writing on specific matters or on general matters. I think that's the actual wording of it. But today, you get all sorts of letters coming from the permanent secretary and, you know, signed for permanent secretary and signed by other people. And several times I told the ministry, look here, please don't send me any such thing because you have no right to. If at all it is a directive, it must come from the minister or by direction of the minister. So it has stopped.
Do you think that rule should have been there at all?
I think it is desirable, you know, because otherwise there is no safety valve. It is a safety valve, but it can be, like all safety valves, they can be abused. Today they invoke this particular power to give directions on the most crippling things.
How, well, before I get into that, some small
points.
What about overstaffing, especially at the lower level?
There is considerable overstaffing now. For instance, if I have 10 chefs to do a job in this office, in any public department, I am perfectly certain they'll have 50 at least. But then you see, now it gets difficult. The government has to find employment for people. So, can you criticize them taking them into government departments or for lack of any other avenue to employment?
How can you simplify these regulations and reduce the class and forms? I presume it prevents to unnecessary.
No, you know, forms serve a purpose. But that's the point, they must serve a purpose. You find a large number of forms which have to be filled up in government activities, which don't serve any purpose at all, they're just piles. Nobody uses them, nobody looks at them. Now here we have a lot of forms, but every form has a certain value and has a certain purpose. We don't have any forms which have no value. As for simplifying regulations, I think the answer is really to scrap them, you know, take a bold decision and scrap them. Pass a law. Everybody must be accountable. Now even in a department in an office like this, we have no regulation, no financial regulation, nothing. Everybody knows what they can do and what they can't do. You do get checks crossing the line. But the moment he does cross the line, within 3 days he does it. That is the point. But the devil is a regulation, it's a breach of a regulation. It takes 2 years to be adjudged. A man commits an offence in the public service, it takes 2 years before the PSC can decide what to do with it. We had a case 2 days ago. One of the subordinate staff, we called him building supervisor. He wanted to work overtime to polish the floor. So I said, okay. 3 or 4 days later, it suddenly, you know, it trickled to me that this bloke had gone out at about, he wanted to work from 6 till 10, you see. 6 till 10 means 6 till 10. He had apparently gone out about 8 o'clock, taken one of the company cars, driven one of the company cars, gone out and had a binge and come back here about 9 o'clock and he was so drunk that he went to sleep in the car. You see, I got hold of this, and it came to me, I got hold of a few people who knew about it and recorded their statements. The bloke heard about it. He came staring to me the next morning, he volunteered a statement. Now, within 24 hours, they had dealt with it. They stopped his increment and cut his bonus. That within 3 days of being discovered. No, the effectiveness of discipline is much quick. You know, if punishing a child for something he got it 1 week ago, punishing today,
what about the system of promotion? Don't you think it's far too automatic? Seniority counts.
Seniority has to count, you know. Otherwise you can get all sorts of pushing by the color of man's eyes and so on. You see, supposing you said, now there is a very, I must say, the way the rule is worded, it's a good thing. Promotion in the public service, they depend on seniority and merit. In other words, if the man, if man has no demerit, the senior man gets preference. And that is correct.
Yes.
If you have the rule to read that it depends on merit only, well, merit is an extremely difficult thing to define, and it is a very difficult thing to challenge on. Anybody could be pushed up, and you just couldn't do anything about it.
But then they have things like efficiency bars, which I
there must be adequate test of merit. Now, if you read that report, we have suggested throughout the whole public service, periodical examination, test or whatever, you qualify. And that is purely to the criterion to define what merit is.
But won't that hinder execution? Won't it be unnecessary distraction? And I won't say unnecessary, but a distraction. And
why are you a distraction?
Well, they might have so many other duties.
No, he must be tested on his work. There is no use testing a man who is doing a particular job of work and something else. And it should take a morning. Now that's the curious thing. You see, it is only the civil service, and I think the clerical service, and maybe some of the other services like the police service, that had qualifying examinations as part and parcel of the efficiency bar. Otherwise, in most departments, the efficiency bar is just a formality. Nobody ever didn't cross an efficiency bar.
Why have
efficiency bar? They're no use. They don't serve any purpose at all.
What about salary structure? Now it is notable that the gap between the top people in the public service and the lower rate is very wide, much wider than in other countries.
Not much wider than the Soviet Union.
Oh. I was thinking of Western countries.
Yeah, certainly it is. Ceylon, it is, I think, over the order of about 16 to 1. About 16 to 1, and even here at this stage, we thought it should be due to about 10 to 1. In America and Canada, it's of the order of about 6 to 1. In India, it's about 50 to 1. In the Soviet Union, there are ratios of 60 to 1. You see the top base scientists and so on. They are paid the earth. So these are all relative things.
But isn't it a fact too that most of our top grade and middle grade officers have also some income?
No, I don't think that's correct. That's the exception, I think. You mean private income?
Yes. Land?
No, I don't think that's correct. Then.
Don't we get dowries and things like that?
Well, they probably do, but not on a scale which would make them independent of their salaries. No, I don't think so. There are the exceptions.
In fact, I don't suppose they could prevent it, but now the British public service is not travel by land.
But I think even in Ceylon, you have to get permission before you buy land or before you invest anything.
I didn't know they
had
that change.
No, there is a rule like that.
How far has a new unified administrative system been working? How far has it improved matters?
I don't think it has improved matters at all. For the simple reason, the old division still exists, the division within this administrative service. You find the civil servants still ganging together, and all the others ganging up against the old civil servants.
I was wondering to what extent these recommendations were followed, salaries and cars.
They were not implemented at all. they have implemented, you know, bits and pieces of it, but they haven't really done a job of it.
Any crucial work that you feel should have been implemented?
No, you see, that thing was an integrated document. And we are still with it. Either implement the whole thing or throw it out. Don't try to implement it piecemeal. That's a mistake they made. They implemented it as far as the civil service is concerned, administrative service is concerned. They took certain other things out of it, but they didn't implement the report as a whole.
Why?
At the time they said they had no money. That was a recommendation, would have cost about 50 million to implement. But you would have seen that for the first time we introduced a rational structure in salaries and so on. As a matter of fact, they invoke these reports whenever it suits them, but they haven't implemented it. The recent post this time, I think the minister said that even the Dilmatpura Salaries Commission didn't recommend something on designation. Okay? I don't see how they can invoke something which they haven't decided to implement.
What was the reaction of the government of the day to this report when it came out?
We don't know. There is none. There's no reason why they should have an adverse reaction.
I don't suppose many of them
even
realized.
Yes, that's
quite true. I noticed that Mr. Pereira or someone gave a strengthening.
NS Pereira.
And I was wondering what
made of it. Well, I think he had certain views about the relationship between technical officers' salaries and other people's salaries, and he just was adamant about it.
Was he a technician?
He was Survey General.
Pardon?
He was Survey General at the time.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Personally, I think it's a mistake to discriminate. Now, hitherto, technical people have been discriminated against. But it is no solution to reverse that proceeding. Now, we adopted the device, you know, that say the range of opportunity should be the same whether you're administrative or technical. But the progress from the bottom to the top should be slower for the administrator than for the technician. That was the device we adopted there. But both have the same opportunity.
Well, if I may, with some questions on some posts you had. I'm afraid I had only the 1963 civil list. I noticed that in 1947 you became Assistant Secretary to the Ministry of Defence and External Affairs. I presume you may have held that post till at least 63.
I held it 57. 10 years.
And then in 1967?
67, I went to Treasury.
Additional
control establishment.
Any other changes?
Then 58, I went to the Salaries Commission. I was there for 3 years almost.
Oh, I see.
Then I was chairman of the Sugar Corporation.
Chairman of?
Sugar Corporation, Council of Sugar Corporation.
That's 1961.
60, I think it was. Okay. I retired at the end of 61.
And if I may ask, when did you become head of the Fertilizers Corporation?
May 66.
Have you been at the official post since 61 or?
61.
I was very interested in your period as assistant chief secretary, though that was fairly short. I was wondering what sort of people creating and calling, and even the governor more.
First class people to work with. I was doing defense at the time. You know, that was the latter years of the war, I think, 45, 44, 45, there about. Very nicely closed. And we got clear decisions from them. There were never any hanky-panky about it.
I thought Colin was a bit of a pedestrian.
Colin, yes. I mean, Colin was got the worst of that luck. But Brayton was really outstanding.
He seems to be rather unpopular with the civil service.
He's really?
Yeah, even the administrative
service. Not that they know all. Well, he was the sort of chap who didn't stand for any nonsense. Now, I remember well, I was a very junior civil servant at the time. I was doing defense, and we were, you know, just sort of running down the defense. And there was one thing I had to do to eliminate all the Trincomalee defense regulations. Trincomalee, you know, was governed by a network of defense regulations. And we had to run the whole lot down and provide only for the minimum that was required, you know, for the transition of the state. And I wrote to the army and said, well, look, you think that we should be changed? Well, what have you got any comments to make? So some brigadier bloke rang me up and said, you know, the general would like to meet you to discuss this before he sends you a reply. Can you come round sometime whenever it's convenient to you? I said, look, now, I was young at the time. I said, does the general want to see me? I said, that is so, the normal courtesy require that he should come round here. So this fellow was very abrupt. He said, I'll tell the general that, and he rang off, you see. I went to the station and I told him this is the case. This bloke wanted to discuss with me and he wanted me to come there, so I said that he should come here, you see. This is the perfect design. He wants to discuss with you, he must come and see you. If you want to discuss with him, you will see him. So that way he was very impartial and certainly no, not anti-native or anything of the kind.
In fact, compared to the chief secretaries of the 30s, he must have been more liberal because he got on with the DNC and America.
He's an able man.
Able man?
Able.
But he seems to have had one big row with DS and left to be some institution.
But he was a legal man, that was probably his drawback. He saw everything in a legal light. But I think the first non-administrator to become chief secretary. He was here as legal secretary.
Did you meet Malthus?
Yes, I knew quite well.
What sort of chap was he?
Well, not that I wouldn't say particularly outstanding. There was a young chap called MacDonald, who was very, very good. MacDonald, Hingley, very good.
Yes, in fact, that's what I was wondering whether you would club any of the civil servants of that day as personalities and really
not really. Oh, yes, quite a lot of personalities. There was a local Davidson. He was really outstanding, but he was a cantankerous look. He couldn't get on with anybody. But as for sheer ability, I don't think there was anybody to touch him.
Any others who struck your eye?
Well, MacDonald was one. MacDonald was very outstanding. No, but by and large, as I said, you know, their greatest asset was that they did a job of work. They were really devoted.
Now, as assistant chief secretary, I presume you would have been involved in some of the negotiations of the day in the sense that you had to prepare.
No, I was only doing defense at the time.
Of course, there was a charge in political circles that the UNC had made the secret agreement.
With the British?
Yes, no, that has been disproved.
No, there were three agreements, which are public documents.
I know that has been subsequently disproved. But I was wondering how much pressure and how much care was given to this security anchor and the confirmation of British voters and strategic interests.
No, I think they followed exactly the same pattern as they followed in other countries which came independent. India, Pakistan, even Australia, Canada.
But didn't they want to continue to use the both basis as long as
no, naturally they wanted to, but the agreement didn't give them the right to. It had to be negotiated.
Turning to another aspect, the question of training as a cadet. How is that has to be on the training course? I mean, would you have liked more of a theoretical basis?
They had no training at all. Well, there was one difference. As far as the accounting side goes, we had to sit with the class and work. And the theoretical side, we looked after them. You've got to do an exam before you're confirmed, 2 years. So that looked after itself.
No, but that was more on law and...
Law, accounts, history and geography of Ceylon, Sinhalese, Tamil.
Did you achieve any sort of competence in Tamil?
Oh yes, I make speeches in Tamil, very good.
But it would have seemed to be more learning on the job than anything else.
Yes.
I was wondering whether you favored the ONM methods and some sort of...
What is this ONM method? You know, a lot of lip service is paid to all these things, plain common sense. All these, you know, these management techniques and all, just plain common sense.
To what extent were you taken out on circuit and...
I went out quite a lot into documentation.
Who were your immediate superiors, Bajula and Matthew?
Let me see, my first boss was an Englishman, I can't remember his name.
Stephen?
No. My senior colleague. Okay, I can't remember his name. Anyway, the second one was Sri Kumarasamy. Badula, and the third one was V. Kumarasamy, very good.
I was wondering whether they were approachable, you know,
from
the young
fellows. Sri Kumarasamy, yes, but Sri Kumarasamy was a tyrant in his day. It was impossible.
I suppose
Kadesh
was treated as very much a contrite. Yes. Were you sort of general dog bodies or?
More or less. Neither fish nor flesh. By everybody, not only the government agents, even the AGAs and the OAs. All the dirty work was passed on to you. Some distant circuit where you had to walk 15 miles to get to the place, Kedet was the man for it. So I walked from the village to Alasmara and back.
You could ride or, you know?
No, it was just rank jungle. In certain parts of it, you actually had to go on your knees. You couldn't stand upright.
And what were the duties of this AGA emergency? Food production?
Yes, really good production.
Was it much of a success, crash program?
Oh yes, I think so. It made a tremendous difference at the time. Now that I remember in Kalgune, that's the time they started tractor cultivation in Ceylon for the first time. There were three stations selected, Polanaruwa, Ambattota and Kalgune. And I was given 20 tractors, and they were given 20 tractors to each place. And we were asked to plow and harrow as much land as possible. We only returned with 2 bushels of paddy per acre. And to begin with, there was a tremendous conservatism. Nobody wanted to touch the tractor cultivation. So after some time, they came around. And they found the benefits of it. It made a tremendous difference.
Didn't
these crash programs of the war years destroy the mapping out of earlier years and cause some confusion in land use and other things like that?
The planning of 1930.
Well, I don't know really. I don't think there was any planning as such. And I don't think the emergency scheme interfered with the ownership of land.
No, I was thinking of village reserves, college reserves and things like that.
No, that was not touched by the emergency.
I thought encroachments were virtually encouraged.
No, not at that time. Not at that time.
Did you have to operate the LDO at all?
Not till the emergency. Not an emergency actually.
But in Bangalore and Bajra, yes. What did you think of the whole...
There's too much parchment of red tape involved.
I was wondering whether it was practicable in the sense that the infrastructure necessary to implement it simply did not exist.
Yeah,
or?
Right.
And in fact, Rajendra, 25 when he asked whether you can prevent peasants and others, you know, from meeting the consequences of their own position, whether you can, you know, prevent land going in the hands of
Mudrali.
When his wife, in fact, to interfere with the process. What did the
Assistant
Secretary to the Ministry of Defense and External
Affairs involved? Well, I went across to Chakanda at the beginning, we started with it. And the entire thing had to be set up from right from scratch.
So it was possible to avoid departmentalization and some
part? Oh, yes.
What were the, I mean, from 47 to 58, what were the relationships between the permanent secretaries and the prime minister? Did you find that minister sent shorter, you know, to permanent secretary, sometimes being heads of department directly?
It depended entirely on the permanent secretary concerned.
Could they put their foot down?
Not really. Of course, there were ways and means of the permanent secretary compelling the minister to meet the head of the department only in his presence.
But
I don't know that the first time I think he was just... He was not a minister at that early stage. He was a minister only in... No, but he must be pretty constitutional even now. He must, having been a public servant, he must be very constitutional, I think, in his
attitude. But I thought
he
knows something was
public
and, you know,
tends
to have...
See, you can't very well criticize that sort of thing because a minister's job is there to get the job done. If in the process of getting the job done, he has to sidetrack red statements on there. I don't think there's anything to say against
him. But doesn't it bear on the question of coordination?
Well, it is somebody's business to see that the permanent secretary is informed, either the head of the department himself or the minister should tell the permanent secretary at some stage.
Yes.
It's not always practicable. It's not always practicable for a permanent secretary to be present when the head of the department is being the minister. I mean, he may be having an appointment himself or he may be out. Everything depends, I think, on the relationship that is established between the two people.
End of interview.